Welcome back to Plot Pit. William Atkinson here in studio with
John LeMay.
And on the phone, Susan Catt of Oracle Bookart and PA Services, LLC. Hello, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
We are great today. Okay, so Susan, as a publicist in the indie author world, we left the last episode talking about, you know, online behavior and how to promote yourself in a kosher fashion, and kind of tying back over to Tuscany Bay's Richard Polinelli's comment of don't be obnoxious about it, which I had to chuckle when he said that. It was just a great a great means. And I have seen obnoxious behavior. I think we have all seen it online. Which is one of the reasons why John and I decided to do the Attitude Award, which we have been given out. Our first recipient was Justina Luther, and our second one was Adrian Lopez.
Congratulations to both of those.
Yeah, Adrian is a great help. He's always trying to uplift other people and their goals for follower counts on Twitter. And we have him scheduled to come in on the show next week. So, with that said, and the general attitude of toxicity in the social media space, and then you yourself being somewhat of a private, reserved person, how do you basically just let it go when you end up in a situation online, or you see a situation online where you recognize it pretty early on, or even you're kind of in the thick of it now? Maybe you've posted something, you've had some engagements, and then all of a sudden things just turn south. And how do you allow yourself the freedom or the liberty to just let it go?
Let me preempt that with years in the past on social media, on Facebook. I never had the problem on Twitter, but on Facebook, people are really quick with their opinions. And I was one of those years ago. And so we then get into this debate. And one of the things I hate more than anything in the world on a personal level is debating. So I'd find myself in these debates and I'd be angry and frustrated and walk off and lose a friend and, you know, all that sort of thing. And I learned basically the hard way that what I have as an opinion isn't really important to what's going on in that particular post. It's just me adding my 2 cents worth. And I just learned over time to, you know, distance myself from having a comment. And I also do a thing on my own personal account where once a year I put up a post saying, you know, that what I post, what I share is usually with my friends in mind and not necessarily my opinion. And that I won't tolerate debating and conflict on my site. And or on my profile newsfeed. And so what's happened over the years is people have gotten very, very, I don't want to say respectful and considerate. And I learned from that. I learned that we can maintain a positive approach if we just take a moment, step back, and it can be hard. I get it when we're all fired up over something, especially, you know, some kind of emotional, political, or whatever thing that's going on. Sometimes it's hard to just take a step back and take a breath and, you know, weigh how important is it that I contribute? And it's not. In my opinion, it's just not important that I contribute. So I don't. And it's a hard thing to tell somebody. I have a couple of authors who have very strong political opinions, and they like to, in their mind, in quotes, educate and online. And that's what they're doing. They're not trying to be, you know, pushy or anything. They're just trying to share, we'll look at it this way, you know, kind of thing. You know, I do every now and then have to go in and say, okay, let's kind of move away from the politics a little bit on your author page. Whatever you do on your personal page, go for it. Mostly because they're limiting, they're dissecting their audience. And what I want is them to have a whole conclusive following. So if they have a niche that they're targeting, say Christian books or Western books, maybe they don't want to, you know, be out in some general groups or discussing general topics on their author page. Maybe they want to target and market, you know, where their interest lies. So I try to very subtly, and as you mentioned, I think in the last episode, diplomatically get them to see how they could be benefiting themselves or how they might be hurting themselves.
Yeah, I've always said, I mean, unless you are a political writer or author, anytime you espouse your political views real publicly and blatantly, you automatically potentially cut your audience in half, you know, because some of them will just drop
you. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and I try to be very broad-minded and I try to be open-minded, you know, so that I, you know, all of the businesses that I've ran over my life, the horse training, the massage therapy that I did, and now the book industry, your clients are everyone. They're potentially every person you run across could be one of your clients or could buy one of your books, you know? So I try to keep my views broad and to myself and open myself up to be willing to hear what other people have to say. I also don't encourage discussions in certain areas, you know, politics, sex, money, religion, but that doesn't mean that I have an opinion on those subjects regarding that person. So I look at every human being out there as a potential client, a potential friend, regardless of, you know, where they come from. It doesn't always go that way, but I start out that way.
So speaking to that, you've recently started the LLC for your business, Oracle Book Art and PA Services.
Correct.
And you are, you know, a publicist and an agent and graphic designer and stuff. Well, let me scratch out agent, because that particular term in the authoring world can be considered a completely different thing. But as a marketer for an indie author or somebody that would be interested in coming to you, such as Roy Griffin, or Roy Griffiths, Roy Griffing, Justina Luther, or even myself or John, you know, as a prospective publicist, are you currently taking clients?
I am taking clients.
Okay. What type of authors and industries do you, or genres do you enjoy working with for our listeners who may be in the market for a publicist?
Well, fiction. My top genre for myself personally is fantasy. And within that, I like the paranormal. I like monsters, beasts, things like that. I like fantasy adventure. This is just my own personal. I enjoy a good mystery, murder mystery or cozy mystery. And I love sci-fi. So I'm going to say that when it comes to you, the author, and you happen to do traditional Western historical piece or something like that, I enjoy those too. So I like to tell people I'm open to all genres. I'm not as, and that's within the fiction world. I'm not saying I won't work with a nonfiction book, but and I have in the past, so I'm open to it. But my sweet spot is fiction, fantasy, you know, sci-fi, paranormal, romance, even, as long as it's fun and it takes us out of this world and into a new one.
And as a prospective author, what services are you offering to somebody like myself, you know, who's looking for a publicist? What I anticipate getting from an engagement with you?
Okay, so I started out with opening myself up to beta reads and branding and trailers and, you know, just all kinds of different tools that an author might want to use in their marketing. And I have slowly over time been tailoring that down. So what I'm offering at this point in time is social media marketing, book cover creation, scheduling podcasts, magazine interviews, blogs, you know, that sort of thing. And then also setting my authors up for comic cons, book signings in their area, things like that. So I've pretty much, I do beta reads and alpha reads by the chapter. I also format for your manuscript. If you're going to send in to say, let's say you want to do a submission to a certain publisher, I'll get all the criteria for that and make sure that your manuscript is formatted correctly for that submission and presented properly. Might send in a piece that you've done to an art contest, that sort of thing. And I also format into book form if you want to publish on Amazon. I'll even teach you how to do it so you can do it in the future. So that's the nut of what I'm offering at this time.
So I've got a question for you, and I hope it's not a curveball, and I don't mean for it to be. This is just my sincere question. You know, I'm weakest in terms of marketing. I've kind of just, frankly, I've just gotten lucky and blessed when it comes to my marketing and my Facebook audience, but I definitely need help in the marketing realm. So, I mean, how would someone like me who has already formatted their book or already published it, how would I pay you or work with you just to be my marketer? Is that like something you would do?
Absolutely. And okay. Most of my accounts are like that. Yeah. So what I would do is we'd have a general conversation to kind of get a feel for if we even want to move forward. Then I have a very simple, short contract, if you will, that just explains what I've agreed to provide for you and what you expect for me to provide for you and the amount of what we've decided on for that. And the duration. And that's for you. That's for you to have some kind of way to say, hey, she's not performing, or wow, you really overperformed. You know, but at least you know that you can expect certain services from me. And I know that you'll stick with me long enough for whatever our duration we agreed to, so I can, you know, do those services. At that point, say we're going to move forward from there. You will provide me with the links to your book, any artwork that you have, any book cover stuff that you have for it, any images that you have in your mind that you may have saved on your computer that you would like to incorporate into your overall vision of what this book is about, quotes from the book, you know, that kind of thing. I need to be familiarized. And I will sit down at that point and set up a campaign. We'll decide, what is your goal? I have one author right now. He just wants to do a top 100 in any category. He doesn't care. You know, so that is going to be our campaign for that particular author. You have a book that's already out there, it's already published, and you want it marketed. We call that backlist book. I look for sales. A lot of times we can do our best marketing during a sale. Or I'll look for more targeted areas in some oddball places that will set you apart and maybe not have you compete as hard to say you're in. Just say you did a paranormal romance. Well, there's one on every corner. That is a really tough genre. So how are we going to set your book apart? We might have to do a little more promoting of your book through blogs, through Reddit, or some place that isn't as widely used, and that limits the other number of authors that are in that area, which gives you a higher percentage of attention. We talk about pricing. You know, I try to keep my prices on the low end of the middle of the industry. I also, when I bring a new author on, I give them a discount for the first 3 months, because this is something that we're going to be doing very closely, working very closely together. And I want to make sure before you as the author has a big investment, that we're a good team, that we're doing, you know, I'm performing the way you hoped I would, and that we get along good. At that point, after that, then, you know, I would be looking at the full pricing.
Okay, interesting.
For, you know, whatever the jury, go ahead.
And are you comfortable on air just like giving me and the listeners kind of just general quotes, or is that something you prefer not to do?
Sure, okay. Sure. I have a basic plan just for authors, not publishers, not publishing companies. But for the indie author or the individual author that comes to me, I charge $175 a month. That includes one book cover per month, if they would happen to have that many going on. All their art, ad art, which I create, the write-ups, and the social media posting, telling them go submit to Pot Pit and get on the air, because I use these podcasts and stuff as tools for their advertising. You get promoted, they get promoted. The viewer gets to interact. They get to, oh, there's something I can listen to, you know. So it keeps them, you know, involved in my author and their book. So that first 3 months, it's $75 a month for the first 3 months. So I'm basically doing all of that. And I'm working probably harder than I normally would, because I want to keep you as a client.
Sure.
So I'm putting out all the effort I can for you for that little bit of money, with the idea that if you stay, then I will be, you know, making what I need to make. Publishers, I have a different scale, and that's personal between them, so I'm not going to try to pin that down. But again, it's very, very affordable.
Oh, I agree. I think that sounds great.
Yeah, I'm not in this. I'm semi-retired. You know, I'm not in this to get rich plan. I mean, books, when they sell, you make 30 cents. If you're lucky, maybe 3 cents.
Yeah.
So it's not like authors are getting rich as much as they would love to, you know, be doing careers. The majority of them are struggling. So I have to make a living. I mean, so I have to charge them, but I don't have to be exuberant with my pricing.
Sure. And I'm like, no joke, I'm actually considering it, because I, nonfiction wise, I do great. I don't need really any help in terms of nonfiction, but I have some novels I wrote that my nonfiction people haven't made the transition. So I'm really thinking about getting with you on that. So for real.
Well, that would be great. We'll sit down. I'll put you through the process like everybody else, and we'll know exactly where you want to go.
All right, John, do you have any follow-up questions?
Gosh, no, I just think it's really interesting, because we've talked to our previous guests quite a bit about the formatting and all that, and we hadn't gone this deep into, like, marketing, I don't think. So that was kind of interesting for a change. So thank you, Susan.
You're welcome, and thank you for allowing me to, you know, share, you know, what I do in this business. I know a lot of other PAs that do similar, and others that provide other kinds of services. And originally I was thinking I want to be like, you know, get hired on with some, you know, big five, you know, in, you know, and so I was trying to bring on all these services and develop a backlog of work. And then I finally realized that, you know what, I am at my passionate high right now doing the social media marketing, targeting for authors, working with them on a personal note. You know, not as the, you know, my publicist is sending you out to blah, 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 and you have to go do those things without any real face-to-face support. So what I'm doing is interacting with my authors on a very personal level. And it means that I kind of get a notion of how their work is going to best be represented out there, mm-hmm. in a way that makes them happy as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, how much interaction do you have with readers themselves? You know, you're a publicist for authors and whatnot. From the perspective of an author, right, I'm effectively wanting to bring,
right,
somebody like you into my mix, because you give me exposure or can help expose me to readers. Do you have, say, a group of readers, like a book club or something that you frequent, that also have social media accounts that's kind of like, as you mentioned earlier in the episode, your street team?
I do not at this time. I worked, when I first started this, that was the thing I concentrated on, was trying to put launch teams, street teams together. And Justina and I worked on that for one of her books. And it started off with a bang. And I really think we could have gone top 100 easily with that book. But the street team crashed. They were good for about 3 days of the campaign, and then, you know, they had lives, you know, moved on, and it was a big help, but we missed our mark. So that is an aspect that I am constantly toying with. In Tuscany Bay Books, what we've done there is our active authors, and most of those have either been on your show or scheduled to be on your show or will be. We have kind of brought them together as a street team. And when we have a release, I am constant on Facebook. We have our own private chat for our authors for promos, and I'll post what I'm working on, and then I'll say, if any of you are interested, please, you know, post this here, here, here. If we have a release that's going on, like Josh Griffin's recent, he got within, you know, 100 numbers of top 100, and he made a number 11 in new releases. Well, we were going to try to go for that number one spot, and we did a big push, and I did a lot of posting on that chat, and those people stepped up, and they posted on their different platforms. Some of them even called friends. And so, you know, between Declan and Roy and Richard, Josh, and another one, Lori, and even Hawkins, Austin, we have a pretty nice little team for Tuscany Bay Books. And I want to develop that into pulling from those authors, people who are dedicated to them, and see if we can put a good launch team together just from those authors. But that is, as far as readers go, I personally interact with them when I do my posts. And I will have my authors, when I have readers that are showing an interest, liking their work, having comments, sharing their work, I get my authors back to those people ASAP to thank them, show appreciation, be real to those people, and maybe, you know, develop a follower who would like to be part of a team. So that's where I'm at right now with it. I search for the reader groups of clubs. I interact on Goodreads or BookBub, and on occasion on Reddit with readers, you know, and it's usually in connection to a specific book, you know, to garner more interest. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, folks, we've been on the phone with Susan Catt, owner of Oracle Book Art and PA Services, LLC. Susan, thank you for your time today. Give us your socials and contact information for any potential clients out there.
Okay. So right now, the best way to get a hold of me is oraclebookart@yahoo.com. That's my email. You can also reach out on Facebook on Oracle Book Art. Or you can reach out to me as Susan Catt, C-A-T-T. I think it comes up as Susan.Catt1 on Facebook. So those three places are the easiest, quickest place to get in touch with me.
Excellent. And folks, you can also interact with Susan Catt on our Discord server if you are interested.
Oh, that's right. I need to start plugging Discord.
I will leave a link in the description if you are watching this on our podcast site, plotpit.com, or any of your favorite podcast streaming services such as Spotify or GoodPods. And if this is part of Plot Pit Classic episodes, you'll find it in the YouTube description below. In the meantime, we have a live Twitch stream coming on the way. John, we are very close to that. I know that it has been teased a while, but for those of you who are regular listeners, you'll know that we do follow through, and YouTube is now moving as well.
Yeah.
We have ways that you can interact with us. We are most active on Twitter at PlotPit. YouTube, we are producing or throwing our older episodes out there, and we have some new content original that is non-podcast form coming, including a short film, which we find to be very exciting.
Yeah.
John, do you have any comments about that before we exit the show?
No, I don't want anybody stealing our ideas.
Okay, so no teasers.
I
then,
can't wait.
Or spoilers.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, folks. Susan Catt, thank you again for your time today.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We'll have you in for a Plot Pit brain hash session soon. But for now,
okay.
John, I do think that's about it.
Yeah. And you could be thinking about it. You can come up with your own topics if you want, or we'll return to the Purgatory River, whatever you like.
Oh, I like that idea. I have a vision on that one.
Excellent. So folks, stay tuned for more information. The last bit of housekeeping here is we are ending our season one in the next couple of weeks. We have a couple of authors that are in the queue for their final, for the final episodes for season one. We're taking a break to do some internal housework as well as some original content that's not of the podcast form. And then we will be starting season two, exiting end of summer, probably around end of July, maybe even August.
Yeah, I think August is probably the safest bet.
Huh? Yeah. And in the meantime, folks, share Plot Pit with your friends, family, and your social media groups if you've enjoyed the content and that we've provided some value. Get everybody up to speed with where we've been, even though there is no particular continuity of episodes, John.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, for now, stay tuned for 10 minutes of green room material with Susan Catt. We are great today. John, what do we got in the pit?
Well, Susan, William, and I were talking earlier today about how we kind of have different listeners. Some are just readers who enjoy good stories. Others are, a lot of them are authors. They like to listen to us to get their creativity going, and they love sessions like we did with you last episode where you just kind of pick your brain about the publishing industry, and we'll get back to that, but we decided, you know, we weren't going to do a story pit session with you today, but I did want you to know what I dug up for you if we did, and just get your opinion of it, and curious if you've ever heard of it.
Okay.
So Colorado has something called the River of Lost Souls or Purgatory River. Have you ever heard of that?
I have. Am I familiar with it? No. I'm familiar with Purgatory, the ski resort.
Okay. I didn't know about that.
All right. So Purgatory in the pit. Let's begin the descent. John, kick us off.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know that we'll do a whole episode on Purgatory or anything. I think we'll get back to discussing publishing here in a bit, but I, just kind of for future reference though, since you're from Colorado, Susan, I thought, You know, our show, we take real folklore and strange stories. Are there any really cool Colorado stories that you think we should attempt to make a story out of in the future? Does anything come to mind?
There are, and I would, I lived in Silverton, Colorado for 10 years, and it's a tiny little town up in the middle of the Rockies between two mountain passes. And there's ghost towns up there, Ophir. There's old mines. And there is the whole Sasquatch thing. Bigfoot mm-hmm. is big up there. So I would tend to, you know, create something around that environment because it's so unique and different. And it's hard for people to even realize that a little place like that still exists in today's world.
Now, Silverton, Colorado, I'm not sure if I have the right one in mind. I was driving, this was years and years ago, 2003, if I remember correctly, was driving from Portland, Oregon back to Austin, Texas. And normally my route would hit Salt Lake and then cut south through the Moab Desert and come across through Farmington, northwestern New Mexico.
Right.
Now, on this particular trip, I decided to continue east from Salt Lake into Colorado, but I didn't go all the way to Denver. I crossed the state line and then I turned south on this two-lane highway kind of thing. I don't remember the name of the town, but I remember driving up to it. It was a little thing that was like picturesque, Rocky Mountain, beautiful. We're in the middle of July or end of June. And the town was built basically like as far up to the mountain as you can get as you were driving into mountain on the left, mountain on the right, mountain in front of you. And you could see this switchback road going up the top of the mountain base, you know, as you would climb up there. And I'm just sitting here with a loaded Ford F-250 side racks. You know, I'm basically moving a couple of storage units down to Texas. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh, dear, I've just traveled 2.5 hours from the interstate. What did I get myself into? And as you come into this, it is a quaint, beautiful old-timey sort of town. It has these picturesque kind of art shops and things, little restaurant, that type. It looks like a summer ski resort town, but there wasn't a ski resort around it.
Right. Now, Silverton itself has a small Bunny Hill resort, but the main ski resorts are Purgatory, which is south over the mountain pass. Then they have extreme skiing at Silverton Mountain Ski Resort, which is going up one of those county roads, and it's really not a resort. It's just a lift, and that's where that draws professional and extreme skiers from all around the world. They do hella skiing and all that sort of thing there.
Now, are you
a
skier?
So there is that in the area. I am not. I'll be honest with you. When I'm a horse trainer, and I'm also a desert girl. I started out in Arizona. I mean, I was born and raised in Oregon, but I lived most of my life in Arizona. And my daughter moved to Silverton and married. And at some point I decided to, switch up, what my life was going to look like. And I moved to Silverton to be closer to them. And I was there, like I said, for 10 years. And we all just moved, me in the last 4 years and my family last year, we all moved just over the mountain north to Montrose. So we're still in the area.
You know, New Mexico and Colorado, specifically Roswell and what would be southeastern Colorado, share a lot of history. The one thing that's popping into the back of my head, John, is the book that you edited, the autobiography of one of the early...
James Miller. Yeah,
yes, James Miller. Yeah. So I've read, a little bit for the William Atkinson Show, which was the first podcast I kicked up here in Roswell. Had you in, actually... and that's where Plotbit, actually connected for the show.
Plotbit was William's idea. I was just his first guest on it.
And it just happened. You kept
and
kept coming back. So, but the James Miller story is kind of interesting because he comes from the East Coast, if I remember right, moves out to Colorado. He's there in an old mining town kind of scenario, and then decides that he wants to move to the Pecos River area. And so Roswell has a lot of history, not just in the old-timey Billy the Kid lore and everything else, but there was some population migration between the two states.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not surprising that, having been born and raised or whatever on the West Coast or, Oregon and Arizona— having found yourself in Colorado, Arizona and New Mexico also shares a lot of history.
It does. And one thing I wanted to mention is that I can't think of the date. Is it 1914, 1918? I can't remember exactly when the flu epidemic hit up in Silverton. It took out a huge population up there, and there's a mass grave. There's a lot of myth and storytelling that can be embellished based on the flu epidemic in the Silverton area, the mining life that was up there, and how those families, and there's still families who are there today that stem from some of those people who passed during that hard time.
Now, if I remember,
so I thought that would be an interesting, kind of a tweak, especially if you want to do something paranormal because of the layout of the cemetery. The history that's behind the cemetery, there's a ton of material that can be pulled from that.
There is a story, a legend that I remember coming across not terribly long ago when doing some research for one of our shows, John. I can't remember which one. But speaking to what Susan just mentioned on the flu epidemic in Colorado and Silverton area, there was this lady, if I remember correct, she came from the Midwest somewhere or maybe Pennsylvania, which would be, depending upon geographically of Pennsylvania, you could consider part of it, the Western Pennsylvania close to the Midwest. The point that I'm making, though, is that she shows up in this town. She becomes kind of like this performer or somebody. The flu epidemic hits, and then she cares for the town. She's not a nurse. She's not a doctor, but she goes around, you know, helping all the sick and whatnot. And then eventually she ends up either sick, or she walks out into the woods and just disappears. She doesn't really, or no, she left the town, but somewhere along the way, her ghost is still attached, and she's rumored to like be wandering around. And so some of the locals claim that they see her, and it's a ghost story kind of thing. So I could certainly see us tying into, and we might even, talking about this today, doing a Plot Pit Travels type thing, running around the state of New Mexico. That Southern Colorado would be a good place to go.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And doing some on location.
Yeah. You find a lot of good stuff here. Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, you can tie into, you know, the whole paranormal thing here, the Sasquatch, the ghosts, the, you know, the mining history. There's some pretty interesting stories out there of individuals. And then there's the cowboy history. You know, you've got who was it, Wyatt Earp, and you know, some of those dudes that came up and hung out in Durango and spent time up in Silverton and Telluride and you know, the local area, that brought a lot of their folklore along with them. We have a bar in Silverton that has bullet holes from, I believe it's Wyatt Earp's, or is it Wyatt Earp or Doc Holliday, one of those two.
Now I'm channeling
fired off a firearm, you know, during some kind of event. Yeah,
one of those Old West shootouts. So the movie Tombstone, who was it that played Doc Holliday?
Was it Kurt Russell? Was he, or I can't remember who was who in that movie. Or there's Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer. Okay. Val Kilmer. So when you mentioned the Doc Holliday bullet holes, I was thinking of instantly Tombstone, the movie with Val Kilmer, where he's drunk. Right. And he pulls out his guns, and somebody says, "Oh, you're seeing double." And he goes, "I got two guns, one for the each of you."
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, for now, goodbye from Roswell.